apparently 988 is absolutely terrifying in that it like just sends police to your house. Like
the number, just 988?
It's the new like national suicide hotline, and people have been posting about it like on social media and like, oh, isn't this great? And like, oh my God, like this great hot, like it's federally funded. And
all what the fuck?
Which it sounds great. Yes.
No, like, it doesn't sound great, but in reality,
it's like, they're taking your information. In some cases, they're sending a police officer to your house.
Yeah.
To drag you off to a psych ward.
It's yeah.
Like sending the cops to deal with a mental health situation never ends well, especially for people of color. And it's so absurd.
Well, I feel like, weren't they already doing that with 911? Or if you were calling, like there was some sort of... there's like that sort of, I mean, your doctor or psychiatrist would tell you as much if there was some issue, like they would have to
report it.
They'd have to call the police.
No, you're right. You're right.
So I mean, it's just, it is unfortunate that it gets, because then, the next step is usually getting carted off, which is like
not good.
As a very terrifying experience or can be from my understanding.
Well, I mean, the kind of places where you're not, where you're signed in against. Anyway. All I'm saying is
underfunded,
like,
to sum it into one word.
Absolutely, yeah. And I mean, all I'm saying is like, it just, not to get on like a high horse about it. It's just it seems like there's no like apple extended to help that doesn't have like some rotten core in it. Like, you know, and it's just, I'm so fucking tired and I hate it here. That's where we're starting. I'm sorry.
Well, no. It's convenient, actually, because the good news is we're going to get out of America for this episode.
For this episode, you're right.
Oh, wait. Hey, Victoria.
Hey, Chelsea.
You know what I could use right now?
Tell me.
A breath of fresh movie.
Ooh. That's it. I'm going to do this differently. Welcome to A Breath of Fresh Movie. This is a weekly podcast where your hosts, me, Victoria Harley.
And me, Chelsea Pope.
Each week we watch a movie neither one of us has ever seen, and then we talk about it.
For the longest time, I kept thinking, like, is it annoying for us to say our names? But then I was like, no, they got to know who our voices are.
Yeah.
Like, duh.
Well, also...
we do kind of sound similar sometimes, so I feel
That happens. I was also going to say that a lot of that is just... me more or less stealing how the dollop opens every episode. Some people have a philosophy in podcasting that like you should always at the very beginning or within the first minute, you need to introduce the show and what it is and explain what it is.
Oh, absolutely.
And I just find that that's like an easy way to start, and then we're done. Then like we can do whatever we want. And not every podcast does this, but I'm with them. I'm like, I think
that's
smart.
Like that makes sense. Like,
I'm emulating
a great... introduce the episode whatever. Right?
All I'm saying is they're very good, and I'm trying to emulate.
This isn't an audiobook.
Very good. Yeah, exactly right. This week's episode, just to keep on track.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
This week's episode is the 1995 romantic drama Before Sunrise. Directed by Richard Linklater, who we'll talk about Linklater. Exactly.
More like link later to our socials and
all that.
Pump it up, baby.
We're gonna link. Yeah. So this is a movie about an American named Jesse who, on his way to Vienna, meets Celine, a student returning to Paris. After long conversations, a surprising connection between them, Jesse convinces Celine to get off the train with him in Vienna. They wander the city together, and as the night progresses, their bond makes separating in the morning a difficult choice. And that's our movie.
There you go.
It's very talky.
It's like talk, like cool place talk. Cool place talk. Yeah.
I do think just how... the city did so much for
beautiful.
You didn't need production design because here's Vienna.
This is one of those movies is that like the whole annoying like, oh, is the city one of the character? Like New York City would argue is one of the characters of this movie.
Right.
No, but like you really could that argument, I think, to a degree. I think because we're left with those empty spaces then. I'm kind of jumping. I'm jumping ahead here.
No, we'll get there.
Like that sort of solidified the significance of
their presence in those spaces.
In those spaces, and in the sense how just sort of in sync they are with things. Things fall together in such like a... if you're a cynic like me, convenient way at times.
Sure.
But it all sort of flowed together, you know?
No, I get you.
Yeah.
Since we're talking about first impressions, what the hell did I think about this? I mean, off the top, I mean, I think we talked about it briefly, but it lived up to the hype.
Definitely. Yeah.
You know, not that there's so much, but currently there is a bit. And is that just because they're all available on Criterion right now? Is that
What do you mean, bit in terms of like discourse? Or?
I just feel like lately I've been seeing a lot about it. Like there have been a lot of pieces recently, but maybe
interesting.
Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe that's
I feel like there's got to have been some. And also, The Black Phone came out, and he's in that.
Oh,
Ethan Hawke.
That's right.
And Maya Hawke, his daughter, is Stranger Things. So I think there's some of that's always floating in the zeitgeist. I feel like the most recent, because this is now part of the first, we're going to be talking about the first of a trilogy.
Yeah, that's worth mentioning. So Before Sunrise is part of a 3-film series, a trilogy.
And it does sort of fall forward in the same way this first movie falls forward. It just is kind of like, oh, it wasn't planned for there to be a trilogy, but then, you know, it's almost kind of like we're getting off on the next train here. And then in a sense, it's kind of like, oh, the story keeps kind of, even though these are movies, it feels like the story's like the sort of existential, like things coming.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It was written.
Continuation.
Yeah. Like it was written without the expectation that there would be a sequel, but with the common understanding among all the players and collaborators in this, that those two, of course, are going to make their date, you know, in 6 months. You know, there was kind of like a certainty among everyone. But I think I liked that the film let you wonder, and whether you're a cynic or a romantic, you could debate whether what happened. You know what I mean?
That's true.
It offered you
as a standalone piece.
If we just are looking at it by itself as it initially was intended.
And you also in theory still could, because there what's great is that it's flexible in both directions that way. This really is just like a moment in time captured between two people. And
I mean, I don't, you know, I don't hate a movie that is a lot of conversation.
Yeah.
I just wonder, like, did anyone have the reaction of just like, it's nothing happens, you know, like the
I bet there, I mean, you know, if you're not into this sort of stuff, or like you also don't, you know, like if you're not into this sort of thing, you're not going
to, I mean, obviously we're not catering to that.
I will say I do get bored very easily with movies. I can get a little bit. I get anxious very easily. I have a poor attention span in general. So,
most of us do at this point.
Yeah. And I honestly felt very like I was pretty attuned to this film overall. I'm not going to lie and say that it gripped me every second.
No,
but I did find every conversation, like they're just sort of ongoing conversation they had as they're walking through the city, very intriguing. And I thought that the elements of the city that they interacted with, the people they came across, I found all of those moments carried significance and would fall forward into this reaction to that stimuli. Like they had people continually coming up to them or they were coming across in certain places.
Well, like the bartender with the bottle of wine.
Yeah, the poet, palm reader.
Oh, I love that poet. And I love that palm reader.
Yeah, there's those other like bros.
The German actors. The Viennese actors.
Right.
Who, by the way, apparently in real life really were two actors in a play about a cow or something. So that was like people they just found. I think is great.
It really does sort of lend itself to that argument of like, if not the city, maybe, we can be hard fact and be like, oh, that's the setting. Then certainly the life in the city is an ensemble, if you will, that you...
Yeah. And I know this is a film, but I had a question, which is just, is everyone in Vienna just like an artist of some kind?
Because it very much romanticizes, you know, that's where I kind of... I'm a little cheeky about sort of, oh, how convenient.
Well,
they ran into a poet by the river.
Right.
Oh, how convenient. A palm reader is going to...
And I mean, that's, you know, Jesse, who's played by Ethan Hawke.
I mean, he's the cynic of the pair of them.
Like, right.
He's much more, I mean, in fact, he's willing to interrogate that after the fact. But I think there's something about the way he does it that feels like very boyish.
Yes.
Very like, I need to let you know that I'm smart.
And she calls him out on it too.
She
like,
does.
You centered yourself in that. Like, oh, I didn't get attention for, because of, for a few moments
and
when
I was
with the palm reader. Yeah.
Yeah. Because
like
I,
she definitely unpacks
yeah,
it.
Yeah. Okay. So when I was really little, I saw White Fang and loved that movie.
Yeah.
And I think I must have had a crush on Ethan Hawke because he was so pretty. You know, how could
yeah,
I
like
not?
I got the appeal watching this. I never understood it. I think because like just never engaged with
He's
a lot of his
very
stuff.
Young in this. I mean, he is young and lean and just has like a look.
Yeah.
But I'm not gonna lie, upon sight, I hated him upon first sight. Mm. Like I was like this.
He kind of like oozes that sort of like I just got my bachelor's. Like he literally is like I'm just postgraduate. Like find like he's having one of those mm-hmm. like trips.
Yeah, we don't find out till later, of course, that it's like, oh, right, like his
yeah.
relationship just fell apart. Mm-hmm. You know, he came all the way across the ocean to see his girlfriend.
He finally gets some more, like, vulnerability
yeah,
that comes out.
We come to understand that.
Yeah.
But at first, I'm like, this is just some privileged white American guy.
I guess that's the lesson
around.
For us is that we shouldn't judge. We're the cynics, being cynical about this.
I know.
This poor,
well,
broken.
And it's not as if she's, you know, men. Perfection, but she has these like almost fairy tale like good looks. Like she's
oh right,
she's got this tangled hair that's like perfect, and she's also really fucking smart, and she doesn't let him
yeah.
own like anytime I because here was what I got a reaction about. I was like, okay, wait, am I supposed to dislike him? Is Ethan Hawke playing a dislikable, like he's consciously trying to get this reaction
yeah.
from us? Or was he cast because he embodies that? Like I was having this kind of constant wrestling going on about like, because
it makes it like good casting.
It
then,
does
really
because, but then and there would be these moments where he would say something that I'm like, I don't like that, and then next scene she's like, I didn't like that.
Yeah. I really worked for me that whole dynamic. And you know, I have to, I couldn't help, again, I'm really like just an absolute cynic, and I fight it but just even from the beginning with the train, I think about, we were talking about just how, you know, magnetic Julie Delpy is in this film. And I have to think like, you know, it's good that he was there and not some gross, like realistically speaking, probably some like gross dude.
Yeah.
Sorry. Okay. Probably some gross dude would be like,
no, I mean, and she does say something later about how like, well, maybe she sat down beside you on purpose. Like,
yeah,
you know,
no,
like you were a good-looking guy.
Well, she definitely
like,
did that, especially after the arguing couple were having their whole.
Oh my god,
their whole.
And I really loved how often we were thrown into scenes where people are speaking German and we're not given subtitles because
yeah.
they want us to feel like, unless you happen to speak some German, you know, you feel a bit unmoored the
yeah.
way they might because they also don't speak much German. And I really like that. Like,
yeah.
I like that. It's like, what are they saying? Oh, we're not supposed to know. Like, I like that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I thought that was cool.
It makes you kind of hyper focus on.
Oh, yeah.
You're really like in their perspective.
And that's what people say about this movie. You know, that's what we're saying about this movie. Like the way the camera stays with them, it feels like a fly on the wall kind of documentary. Like we're with them
yeah.
in such long shots and such long takes that like you really feel like you are there.
Yeah.
You know, like you're experiencing a lot. And everything I've, you know, I mean, this stood out to me for sure, and I'm sure it stood out to you, and I think it stood out to every critic ever. The scene in the booth listening
mm-hmm.
to the record, like, that might be one of the best things ever put on film.
Such an incredible nonverbal acting. I know IGN ranked it in something related to like love stories or wrong. I love all their stupid ranking YouTube, like their movie lists. I love those. But they like brought that scene up, and it was definitely one of those. I remember that distinctly as like, oh, that makes me want to like
yeah, see that.
Check this out because I went into it being like, oh man, I don't know if I can handle just like a bunch of talking for a long
yeah.
time.
Yeah. Like young lovers. Ugh.
You know, and I like Richard Linklater, you know, I enjoyed Waking Life. I mean, if you're stoned, he's your best friend, you know,
yeah.
like if you're stoned and you like the, like talking about life and existence, then you can put on almost anything he's made and you can kind of sink vibe. Your teeth into it. You'll vibe, you know. Boyhood I really enjoyed. I wouldn't rewatch Boyhood. It though. Like I think it's too much. It's for me, like there's a lot of parallels too with a lot of it, which I'm sure like so many people can relate to that suburban lifestyle and having the broken family or whatever, like, and just the inconsistent finances of them. I think some of that stuff's too personal for me.
I hear you.
Sorry, I'm talking a little too much.
No, not at all. Not at all. That's what we're here to do, is to talk.
But this movie felt very like...
Well, I mean, just to capitalize on that, like, Linklater is like obsessed with relationships and suburban living.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, this is like... This is so funny because before this movie, he did Slacker and then Dazed and Confused. And then this. And I mean, some people really love Slacker. I can't do it.
I couldn't finish it either. It gets a little tedious.
Well, and some of his earliest experimental films were like narrative-less, about traveling from point A to point B kind of stuff.
And don't get me wrong, that stuff can't. If you vibe with it, more power to you.
All I'm saying though,
and I love Dazed and Confused.
I really don't like Dazed and Confused at all. And this movie feels so mature next to that.
I have to say this would rank higher.
This
than
is auteur level. I mean, it's so personal and it's so much just about a camera and performances. It's like almost filmed theater.
Yeah.
You know, it's gorgeous and it's so sophisticated, but
it's refreshing.
It's like, I don't know, when you take Linklater out of Texas, something happened.
Yeah,
you know, like and the interesting thing is that although this, you know, the city obviously plays a big part, I did read that he knew he wanted it to be set overseas or in a foreign place. He wanted them to be traveling because people are generally more open to experiences when you're traveling that you might not be open to normally. And you know, the whole choice of Vienna was purely because the subsidies were the best there. Like, so it wasn't like the most romantic choice, you know?
No, but it's maybe just that projection then, literal and metaphorical lens that we're seeing them through and that they're seeing each other through. And maybe it wouldn't, because I think about that too. I'm like, I was critical about her being on the train and like, you know, thankfully it's you know, Ethan Hawke and not like probably some gross ass dude or like other I'm being so cynical. Also too, like them going through the city and having the experiences they had, you know, like what are the odds? And like the sad reality is, I don't know, especially traveling alone as a woman, I couldn't help but think about just like some
what
of the
risk this was
just some of the, I don't know. I feel like I'm just mostly revealing about like revealing that my vibration is cynical. Ergo, my fear going out traveling would be that it would be all of the shittier case scenario. I don't want to say worst case scenario, but like, you know, not having all the fun.
I understand.
I'm like, such a Debbie Downer.
Well,
this movie made me not want to be a Debbie Downer.
No. And that's good.
I was happy for them.
I think that's what it has that effect, not just on its viewers, but you know, Ethan Hawke said something to the effect of like, oh, I was so much more thrilled about cinema and art and I worked on a book and I wouldn't have done that otherwise. It was very energizing. It feels pure. I think that's what it
is. Yeah, that's a really good word for this. And I would also say, pure and potentially very optimistic or just like accepting. Like there was just a very sort of...
And their anonymity,
relaxed energy
with each other, we're on the exact same footing. Like we're learning as much about, like we learn at the same time as the characters learn. And there's something really, it feels like spontaneous. It feels alive. And I like that there's moments of tension. And I mean, we mentioned the listening in the booth. That's not the only place, but even like, you know, right after she's agreed to get off the train, at some point they're on a bus together and he's kind of immediately got his arm, not around her, but like over the seat behind her. And I was like very distracted by, like there was tension.
You can see there, he really like
the space.
Linklater.
Yeah.
He enjoyed like having us get to watch them get closer and closer and just like they're holding hands going down the street.
Yeah. The space between their bodies. There's this electricity that's just jumping. And it sounds so cheap. I hate when people talk about, because it's not even about the romantic chemistry or whatever. I mean, it's like two performers who are completely present and who believe in like what they're saying.
Do you think they were really into each other?
I don't know. I mean, there's a part of me that
did she ever love him?
I hope they didn't. I like, there's a part of me that wants to believe that they were so professional and cared so much about the craft that like that would only get in the way.
Oh, sure.
You know, and that it was like they were beyond that. But I also know that it's very normal for people who play.
I'm sure it's got to come from a real place. I just have to ask this a lot. When Christine parts ways with the Phantom at the end of Phantom of the Opera, I remember asking my mom, like, did she ever love him? And I got really upset because she like was like, I don't think so.
Oh, I was like, no.
I don't know. And then, but it makes me think about that. I like just think that question once in a while in terms of when I see especially good chemistry between performers.
Yeah. It's important to note that although this film was written,
they're just very good actors.
Oh yeah, they're excellent. This film was written by Linklater, but he also had a writing partner named Kim Krasan. She was in Slackers and Dazed and Confused as well. Yeah. I don't know the roles, but because he knew he wanted to write this story based on an experience he had where he spent a night walking around with a woman he had met, and just they had a really intense conversation and they were up till dawn. Yeah. And he knew then that he wanted to capture that feeling and that night. They wrote a screenplay together, but then once they cast Ethan Hawke and Julie Delpy, they more or less came in and kind of rewrote it. And that's not to say that like they came in like, oh, this is terrible. No, they were invited to rewrite it.
And really so much for the better, too.
Oh, yeah. No, they injected a lot of romance into it. It was very talky, heady, it lacked a lot of romance.
Make it their own too, where they could really embrace the roles and make them feel so natural because it literally is coming from
part of why they were attracted to it also as a project, because they weren't just wanted as actors, they were wanted as collaborators. Now they don't receive credit in this, however in the following two films they do receive co-writing credit. So you know, I think it was the first movie. Well, not, I mean, no one thought of it as the first movie. They were just trying to get a movie made.
So right.
They weren't about to fight for these like extra credits. They felt like, just forget it.
Valid.
Like,
but then when it becomes an awards,
then
darling, we're talking sequels. I think that's valid. That's an understandable trajectory.
Absolutely. But it's worth noting. And it's not a secret. You know, everybody's pretty open about that.
Yeah. It's humility and good collaboration on.
That's what I mean. Okay. Well.
Someone engage with us.
I know.
And tell us the answer.
Like, just somebody get mad at us.
Hello, is there anyone alive out there?
Yeah.
Sorry. Thank you for listening.
No, it's fine. I wish I had some echo to put on that. Linklater. Let's go with that.
Linklater said
he wanted to have this experience of where you discover two people who had complete anonymity and try to find out who they really were. It took 9 months to cast it. They really took their fucking time.
I think, what did I read? Or I know I watched like some YouTube video. I did some research.
Good for you.
No,
I love that.
No, but Jennifer Aniston.
I heard that too. I heard that. I was
like, sometimes she comes. She, you know, cause she also auditioned for SNL. I'm like, she
could have fallen into any number of directions.
She got around. Yeah. She really could have gone a lot of different directions.
In another world. Yeah, because they weren't sure exactly who. Like, I think the original characters were so vaguely constructed. It wasn't clear, you know, if one was going to be American. Like,
if they were both going to be American, that would have been so. It's so good that it's good that it's someone, it feels a little more like it would be distracting. Like, it'd be like, oh, okay, this is. I'm accepting some convenience in this story sake of like wanting to feel romance and like joy.
I'm with you. If it was two Americans, I'd be like, ugh.
And also, Ethan Hawke has that specific kind of like energy, and then I don't know, it's hard for me to imagine Jennifer Aniston not being like that sort of Rachel, or like very kind of like, I don't like that sort of get my fortune read.
Do you know what they're fighting about?
Yeah. You know what they said. I read somewhere that you stop hearing people as you get old, and women can't hear the lower register of men. Yeah, does that sound familiar to you? No, it's the opposite. We're literally not hearing each other. Yeah. Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
I like that. That was fun.
I think it was probably really annoying.
I thought.
But I wanted to express that. I feel like you need.
No. I think that was funny.
A specific type of actress for this.
Well, and also, even though they're in Vienna, somehow it feels like we're more on her territory than his because she's European.
She seems more accepting of the people who are approaching.
Yeah.
Which is, I find, all the more fascinating as well because, like, I even at her age, because now I'm older than she was in that movie, I think, I would already be like, no thanks, I don't want my fortune read. Why are you coming up to me?
Very
cagey. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, you know, again, it's just refreshing to see, like, oh, it's free spirit. But I hesitate to, you know, say that and then not call out, like, she's not a manic pixie dream girl. And I think it's good to acknowledge, though, that people borrowed from characters like this to create what became a manic pixie dream
girl. I agree. No,
you know?
I
think she's like a root influence, but not literally.
Oh no,
that.
She's so much more richly drawn than that.
Yeah,
and also I love that it's like, oh, I'm going back to Paris, going back to school. It's like, oh, where are you going? She's like, Le Sorbonne.
Yeah,
and it's just she just says it so quick, but I'm like, oh fuck,
yeah,
she's smart.
Yeah,
she's smart.
So she doesn't
wave it around. She just says it very matter of factly. But I'm like, I just like sat up in my chair a little bit.
Like, I feel like
that's a really good school.
Yeah, and who's to say that she's not intelligent and resourceful enough to like not handle traveling on her own?
Oh, and you know, he seems very eager to show that he's intelligent.
Yeah,
and then even admits later that he's like, everything that came out of my mouth sounded so stupid.
Yeah,
he clearly, you know, and that's the thing, right?
Like,
men are definitely threatened by when a strong, intelligent voice comes out of a female's body.
Right,
it's like, whoa, you know, wait. And so I like that we're seeing him kind of contend with that in the moment a bit. He wants to be in control, but she's like, I mean, that's why my best supporting player nomination goes to the palm reader for telling her, oh, he's learning.
Yeah.
You know, and she really just like put that guy in his place and he didn't like it, but I liked seeing it.
No, she went for it. And I also just, I thought it was funny, but also I really enjoyed just how much the palm reader very quickly had to say about her by just glancing at her hand. And it clearly is like just to serve for the story, and
absolutely,
it's supposed to just reveal more about Julie Delpy's character. But I also just, I found that kind of funny, but like still really endearing, I guess.
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
Just like, and you are this and that, and you are so special and wonderful and intelligent, and you get everything you want in your life, but don't be cynical. I think she tells her not to be cynical or something, right?
Yeah.
Or not to be critical.
Yeah. Yeah. She's definitely more the romantic. I mean, she's more open to the experiences. And what's funny is whenever there is this moment like that happens, the scene will kind of end, but the beginning of the next scene will have him interrogating the previous experience and kind of ruining it, like kind of taking a shit on it. And you can tell it bothers
her. Taking the piss out of it.
Like, it's like, we just kind of enjoyed something, but you have to. And then I like that she's like,
yeah,
Mr. Romantic wants to kiss on the top of the Ferris wheel, but now you're like too cynical to acknowledge anything.
Yeah.
And I just felt relieved that she was contending with all of it. And really, I didn't feel she was slighted. You know, she held her own and really ran circles around him, I thought, you know. And not that it has to be about that. I mean, obviously, like, once he starts showing vulnerability, now I care.
I think,
I don't want to, guys don't understand that. Like, why don't guys fucking get that? When a dude is toxic and trying to act like nothing bothers them in that way, you know, women want to see you just be like, I'm scared.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, exactly. Exactly. It's that vulnerability. And like, I think a lot of guys wouldn't get that far in like a lengthy sort of conversation or.
Oh, no.
You know, back and forth about life and experiences.
And he is like clearly really impressed with her.
Yeah.
Like, and not in like a shitty condescending way. By the end, I was kind of like, no, I think there is something sweet. There is a connection here. It's not bogus.
Yeah. He's not just like a horny dude. Like,
no. And I like the ambiguity, although I think it's maybe not that ambiguous about like them in the park. You know, and then in the morning, and in the morning we see her and she has the dress on, but the shirt's not on under the dress.
Right. Yeah.
It's like, something.
They left it semi-ambiguous, but not totally.
Not totally. I mean, I think Yeah.
Like you could kind of make an argument either way, but you know, there was at least some heavy petting.
Oh, something went down. Yeah, for sure. But I don't know, even the debate like that they're having a conversation about why it would be a bad idea, why it might be a good idea.
Like, yeah, there's all that preamble and then it just cuts away.
Exactly.
The next day.
You decide. Oh, by the way, the Ferris wheel that they kissed on is a famous site in Vienna.
Yeah.
And it was built in 1897. It's called Wiener Riesenrad. Yeah. I hope I said that right. And it also was in The Third Man, the Orson Welles movie. So just mentioning it.
Yeah.
Ferris wheel.
No, you know why I think they definitely did bone is... is
back to the important stuff.
I don't care about I'm
You're
sorry.
Like, aha, Ferris wheel, great. Back to the bone. Back,
no, I this is what the listeners this is what they showed up for. This is why they all came to the auditorium. It's because she said I knew I wanted to sleep with you, or I already decided I wanted to sleep with you when I sat next to you or something like that.
Mm.
Like she makes that joke.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's after she says that I don't think we should sleep together.
Yeah.
She then says, true. I decided I wanted to sleep with you when I came to sit next to you or something to that effect.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, they definitely like probably boned.
Oh, no, they definitely did. I don't think.
Probably boned.
They left it kind of.
Who shot first?
I mean, you know what's funny? Roger Ebert's review at some point, he mentioned like at the bottom of the review, like not in the text really, but he was just like, oh, this is rated R, but like only really because of a few words. Like,
yeah,
this is an ideal movie for teenagers. Like, yeah. He seemed to really think like this was a great, and I could totally imagine if I had seen this when I was like 15, how I would want a year rail pass. And, you know, I would just want this experience so
absolutely
badly, you know.
Absolutely.
And there's a lot of movies that have this kind of compressed timeline of like everything happens in one night, wandering the city together. There's this Italian movie that's an adaptation of a Dostoevsky story, or maybe it's a Tolstoy story, I can't remember. But it's called like I Notti Bianchi, White Nights. And it's mm-hmm. basically like a similar plot in that it's like two people wandering this city all night together. And
yeah.
I don't know. I just there's an interesting tradition of that. And films that have a compressed timeline, I think, it's always a good call. Like you're taught that in screenwriting, mm-hmm. like school, to like, you know, if you can cram this thing into like one day, all the better, you know?
Yeah.
So this movie is
just like Pedro Almodovar.
I mean, yeah.
Women on the Verge. Except that's more like a 2-day, probably,
yeah,
right? It's about a couple days.
It's
but
like
it
a
is
day
very,
and a half.
It's very compacted.
It's a day and a half or so, because at one point she's just exhausted, right? Just
right.
Like, you know, she's like, I haven't slept in 2 days.
Yeah.
It works well. This movie premiered in 1995 at Sundance. In the New York Times, Janet Maslin said, this is the Ural Pass version of an affair to remember. There's more than romantic love in the air. There's also the exhilaration of making contact with a kindred spirit, of instant conversational intimacy between two strangers. Roger Ebert said, Before Sunrise is so much like real life, like a documentary with an invisible camera, that I found myself remembering real conversations I had experienced with more or less the same words. Did you feel that way? Like that they were saying things that you had thought of before, or that you're like, oh, no, I feel that way, too.
Oh, absolutely.
There was a little bit of a graduate,
I mean, you know,
vibe to this. Like,
back to the boning scene. No, just the her really, I really liked you saying interrogating. So I'm using that word now, too.
Yeah.
Like her really interrogating that idea of like trying to protect her emotional well-being and this decision of whether or not to sleep with him on this like first and possibly only time she may ever see him. And then she's like, well, then I feel like I'm gonna wonder where you are, who you're with. And it's like,
yeah,
I, you know, I'm sure there are people who would think that it's like, I don't know, it's reductive, or maybe it's like regressive, like some of the stuff they talk about between like the two sexes, you know, and on the feminine behavior, masculine behavior. But I mean, I feel like that is that's a difficult thing to contend with,
yeah,
that, you know, is still an issue now. I've definitely slept with people on first dates, mm-hmm, and then when it didn't work out, wondered if that like was a mistake and it's affected myself. It's like, oh, I gave up too much. Like,
right.
Oh, it hurts my self-esteem now. Like,
yeah.
did my, I
did I not value myself, or I don't know.
No, like, you're right on the money. And I think you're right. I think there's this kind of like, I did like what she said about, I'm worried that feminism was like invented by men, that it was like, you know, free your body, free your mind.
She's like, really put a lot of thought into it. No, like I understand her point of view, because like I think I'm like, no, from my experiences and what I've seen, and
women just carry more now.
There are certain things that are just true about, there are some truisms here,
some.
Or things that I can,
yeah,
that I can, that I, that she, some of the beliefs and assertions that she has,
yeah,
including interrogating this idea of like, what if it's all like,
what if it's all a sham,
what if it's all propaganda brought by big man,
right? I mean, and it's not that like we're, you know, of course we know that that's not, that isn't the
not
case.
Anti-feminist, okay?
No. I mean, but I like that she had the thought. There was a scene, I have had this thought when Jesse starts talking about the notion of reincarnation and how the population has increased. There are way more people on the planet today than there were, you know, 100 years ago or 1,000 years ago. And so he's like, so if we're being reincarnated, then like, we're not going to get a whole soul. It's going to be like 1 to 5 or something. Like it'll be like a fraction of a soul. Like how does this reincarnation thing work? Like where do the new souls come from? And like, and I must admit, like I have actually had that thought before.
Oh, absolutely.
And it was like,
no, that's super, wow. Like, that's a very relatable, like spiritual conundrum.
Yeah. And then it's so numbers based, but it's also a very logical question.
Truly. Like, it's like, oh, are we, maybe some of these souls are from like, maybe my soul is from like an extinct dinosaur.
Oh yeah,
or other something.
No, you know what? I forgot about the
maybe
the
you have
crossover.
Yeah,
potential.
Maybe you have a dodo soul,
or like just a mosquito that went splat on.
Yeah, we haven't taken into account all the ants and the mosquitoes, and that's just if we. I mean, you know, I'm really trying to bend the rules to her. Or this is just fully assuming that like our souls can be between
this,
different species.
Yeah, this movie's full of like little
that we have souls in
little moments like that are. That are sort of connect, that it's like the clothesline is their interest in each other, and then there's all these sort of like little funny interesting chats, sometimes personal, sometimes vulnerable, sometimes not, sometimes full of artifice. But I mean, that scene in the fucking booth where they're listening to the record, it's like the whole movie is encapsulated in that one scene.
It's really nice.
It's so good.
It's very
it's
nice.
So good.
And don't feel like it's everybody, there's that, I feel like, what is it? I'm basically reciting like a poster or a meme at this point. It's like, or no, it's a quote. It's a quote from someone that I don't know who, but it's like the, you know, stupid people talk about like themselves or each other. Like it's like yourself or each or other people. Mm-hmm. And then like people with like talking about ideas or something. I don't remember. You know what I'm talking about? It's like the tear of like,
I do.
Maybe cut all this. I don't know.
No. I don't know the name for it specifically,
but there's that like,
but there's a notion of like having, there's conversations. Yeah. That, aren't enriching or, you know, like
most conversations are not enriching.
Yeah.
Even with like, friends and acquaintances, it's always it's a lot of like shit talking, or
it happens.
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I don't,
we're talking about the state of the world, but on a more sort of like,
well, I think not to like be like, well, we're just living in so much chaos, like we get off the hook, but I think it is tough. I mean, right now I think like it feels
very
difficult to be distracted or to not be distracted.
No, 1995 was a precedented time.
Yeah.
1995 was a precedented time.
Yeah.
We are in unprecedented times.
Yeah. It just feels kind of, I don't know. I think we have a lot more, well, I don't know. It's so hard to say, but it's just, there's just times where I feel like it's all the harder to want to engage in things that are like so removed from day-to-day problems. Like,
yeah.
Like I think that's why I could not stay in academia. Like, that notion of the ivory tower is, you know, a little silly, but at the same time, it's like, it's more of a cloister. It's like, people are content, and hey, if you're content, you're content, and you're not in my way, but I did not want to, like, live in this place where it's a tiny niche community, where we're all concerned about issues that nobody outside this place has any idea or concern about.
So you do sketch comedy?
Yes. I'm just, I know I could be talking about literally anything. Right
no, but
now.
I feel, no, you're not wrong. I just wanted it to be a dick.
No, it's funny. It's just, there's like a hip, I learned in grad school, there's a hipster subculture to anything, including academia.
Yeah.
Like, and.
Right. I mean, you know, shit, I've thought about this in terms of professions too, in terms mm-hmm. of just, yeah, like niche groups.
There's
cliques.
Always a clique.
There's always going to be clicky bullshit. Like if I do my fallback career being a teacher.
There's always a young hot shot. There's always like the one who's charismatic and not that hot, but because they're just like charismatic and not ugly. Like people are like. Swooning.
Oh my God, you're literally talking about my restaurant too. People, no, it's like there's always like the people fulfill these different roles, right? Mm-hmm. I'm always like the stay away from that girl, she's crazy bitch asshole one. Like I always fall into that one. I unintentionally somehow always wind up being the pixie stick girl, putting it on her ham sandwich, the basket case or whatever.
That's you.
Yeah.
Cool.
Inevitably, I'm going to become that asshole who just went to detention because she didn't want to be alone on a Saturday and had nothing to do.
That's one of the
I had to make this about me.
That's one of the saddest things I think I've ever heard.
I can't believe I just like made this all about me again.
That's okay.
When?
What's the podcast for otherwise?
As you go in there, you make it about you.
One little question I had, which was like, I just felt like and this is not a problem, it's just my own stupid brain, but like, every time it felt like the night kept starting.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wait, isn't it dawn? Isn't it almost sunrise yet?
I
like,
did, you know, I did like, really feel, wait, like wait, now we're sitting down at a cafe. Wait,
right, they were at like another restaurant. I'm like, isn't this almost over? Like, they're like, we need now to enjoy everything tonight. I'm like, isn't the night almost over?
Yeah. Like I honestly, cause I've gone on a couple dates, I would say, like maybe three, where it's been this almost like an all night affair type of deal. Mm-hmm. Usually ending in sex. But yeah,
well, I mean, that's, you know, that's what that.
Because at that point, I'm just like.
You've been out all night.
I'm quickly excusing it as a, well, you know, also like, I want this too.
Right. I think it's some of it too.
I'm going like, to get mine.
Some of it is a little bit of like a throwing a bone because it's like, yeah, that was a marathon for you. I get it.
a little bit of
and
that.
And I don't, we hung out all night and I just don't dislike you right now. So that might be a good sign.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Like, I mean, and that's like a fundamental question in this, right? At the end about do people grow tired of each other or are more fond of each other over time? And, you know, he's asserting one thing and she's asserting another. And although I haven't seen the other installments, I understand that that question is worth pondering as we like move forward, which we are going to in the next two episodes.
And I have not seen the other two films.
There are
certain things that
I don't know what's coming.
Obviously, with like the YouTube binging and other bullshit like criticism, I've seen
photos.
More or less been spoiled on it.
I've seen photos of Ethan Hawke with like different hair. That's all I've seen.
Suffice it to say, they keep coming together. Time. I think of it as like it evokes the ending to this sort of evokes like an Eternal Sunshine type of like ambiguity. But like once you know that there's other, I guess not. That's not the best comparison. Eternal Sunshine. The end of the movie. You know, the last time they speak, she's like, "We're just gonna do, you know, the same thing over and over again. And I'm gonna do this. You're gonna do that because
that's who we are.
That's what I do. That's what you do." And he's just like, "Okay." But then we see them repeatedly running through the snow, and that's deliberately to indicate that they are in the cycle.
Yeah.
Where they're going to, this is what they do now.
Yeah.
Like they're going to continue to erase each other and fall back in love and erase each other and fall back in love because that's their
so
nature.
Weird.
It's like, it's kind of in a way, I feel like you can look at it and laugh a little bit. You can look at it and it's a little pessimistic in a sense that you're stuck in the same like mm-hmm. hamster wheel, but you can also find like there's some, it's ultimately a comedy, I think.
It is. But there's something Sisyphusian about that.
Absolutely.
You know,
it's a pretty melancholy song they play in the credits right after that too, actually.
Is that Beck song?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Change your heart.
Yeah.
Look around.
One of the saddest songs ever.
Yeah. Meanwhile, this has that ambiguous like
it does.
Feeling of,
I really, yeah.
They're going to keep coming together. What I meant to say in regards to Before Sunrise is just my feeling just from this one and from what I've gotten about the other films so far is that I get the sense that regardless of however you think they
they leave things at the end of these respective movies. They keep coming together again and again because that's what the universe is
expecting.
That's the universe they're in, at least.
Mm.
Would that ours was so fanciful. No,
that's true though, because he does introduce part of his pitch to convince her to get off the train, right? Is this notion of like, think about this as time travel.
Yeah.
Like, imagine yourself married in the future and, you know, you're wondering about all those guys and here's your opportunity to like find out what it would have been like, you know. And it's sort of a weird circular logic, but I kind of liked the complexity of the pitch, you know, like.
Yeah. It would have convinced me for sure.
Well, that's just it, right?
And not like, just because he's cute.
And I mean, like, I'm not calling that a pickup line, but if it is, it's one very intelligent pickup line. Like,
yeah.
And not like annoying until, I mean, like.
He definitely stepped it up. Like, he was not intimidated after her saying that she was studying at La Sorbonne, you know?
Yeah, he stepped it up. And also, what I liked about that, too, is that he.
And he knew what it was, too.
Yeah. He centered it on her. He made it about her experience, her night. That's how he sold it. Not like.
He did a good job. It wasn't, it wasn't about his needs. It was about, like. You're going to be left wondering, like,
it's an experience.
It's an experience, right? Don't you want to experience life? You seem like someone who values life.
And she's just romantic enough to kind of be like, okay. And he also was like, hey, I might turn out to be a creep. You could hop on the next train and go.
Yeah.
There is a kind of like, she's not trapped. You know, like if she gets off the train, it's not like, oh no, I'm now in a car with this person.
This is also how I sell food at my serving job. And people are like, I don't know, should I get that sausage pizza? I'm like, well, if you've been thinking about it this much, you might as well let yourself enjoy it. Hey, if you don't like it, we'll take it back. Uh-oh, sorry, Bichetti. It's true. I do tell people that. Stay mad.
Yeah.
Notice how they usually don't send it back because I sold it.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
ABC. Always be closing.
Yeah.
With Ciabatta.
Always be chetting.
Always be chetting.
Always be chetting.
You want to hear a little bit about...
Oh my gosh.
Richard Stewart Linklater.
I love it.
All right.
Who are you calling a Linklater, you cootie queen?
A little Linklater. He was born July 30th, 1960. He's got a birthday coming up.
Mm.
Houston, Texas.
He's a Leo.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you for that.
That says a lot.
His hair is important.
He would be a Leo.
You think so?
I've liked Leos before. Smart Leos.
Smart Leos.
I'm projecting that on the Ethan Hawke character. I'm like, oh, that guy was definitely a Leo.
He seems like a Leo, yeah.
It's
that hair. In case you weren't aware, he's an American film director, producer, and screenwriter, known for films that revolve around suburban culture and the passage of time. We mentioned that he had made Slacker in 1990. That was his first film. Followed by Dazed and Confused in 1993, which was kind of a hit and critically loved. Mm-hmm. It also did really good in VHS sales.
That makes a lot of sense, though, because it is a really good just like having that on the TV. Mm-hmm. Like, it makes sense that they would play
it's
that a lot.
It's a party movie.
Was it TNT or TBS that would play
probably
it a lot?
Probably both.
Yeah, you know, those movie channels, remember?
Anything Turner would, yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like Comedy Central occasionally would get it.
Yeah.
It's also the film that introduced Matthew McConaughey to the world. So there's that.
There you go.
I know.
It's the oldest he's ever looked in a movie, too, I feel like.
I know, right?
I feel like he's always looked younger.
So gross.
Since then.
So gross. I really don't care for Dazed and Confused. The whole paddling thing is just like... I hate it.
It
was so upsetting to me as a kid, even though I would never have been in that situation.
Apparently, like, that was just a lot allowed to nowadays.
Well, that movie was based on Linklater's experiences going to Huntsville High School in Huntsville, Texas. And I don't know that that was like the normal thing, but man, Texas is... There's some weird hazing.
I mean, you can definitely cut this out, but I do think that this sort of that like it's fucked up that this hazing. It's like, oh no, well, no, we've gotten rid of the hazing, but now we have shootings. So it's like,
Yeah.
I'm like, I was just about to say, like, oh, thank God we don't do any of that paddling, hazing, like fucked up bullying that we used to.
We just
have a record number of shootings.
Yeah, we also
daily.
We also like ruin people's lives like through the internet.
Oh yeah, the internet,
cyberbullying,
psychological warfare.
I for one am very relieved I got out of high school before like smartphones.
Like, yeah, I'm actually like a little pissed that I couldn't have like finished high school maybe 10 years earlier before MySpace or any of that. I would say actually only I would have only needed maybe 5 years.
5 years.
But I'm also maybe factoring in like LiveJournal and some of the other shit.
I did LiveJournal and MySpace toward the tail end of my high school experience.
I would have loved to have not ever had to deal with that environment, because that conflation was like also kind of gross.
Awful. Yeah. I mean, that was just coming about.
It's also like a major distraction for me too.
Oh, fucking God.
Totally.
No,
the undiagnosed ADHD plus like, you know, this brand new social platform that everybody's on school.
And like, then I was doing like LiveJournal and Zanga and stuff like that.
Oh, and all the
like,
journaling and shit too.
Oh my God.
And all the fandoms. Oh my God.
It was really more just about like deciding on what theme I wanted a webpage to look like. I cared more about how it looked than what I was writing.
Yeah, I was always tinkering with HTML and I was like, what am I doing? I have like 20 friends maybe.
It was pretty much the reason though I got a digital camera, because I was like, I want to have pictures on my blog.
Yeah.
It's like, okay.
It turned a lot of people into amateur photographers. It really My did. Sister wanted to be a photographer for a minute.
Yeah, I still think it's incredible skill. It's so technical.
Oh, for sure.
It's so technical. Like that. I think that's just
my sister could have been great.
I mean, I'm like, I know life is well, it might not be long for me. Who knows? But I mean, I have.
I it's going to be long. Okay.
Okay. I'm just saying, knock like, on wood. Let's pretend like I have, you know, 30 years. I could definitely like become a great technically skilled photographer in that time, but for some reason in my head I'm like, no, you know, that's for someone else. You should have thought of that sooner.
I feel that like, way too, you know, like, absolutely. I feel that way about like piano and musical instruments.
Oh, like it's it, and I know
like
it's,
oh, I missed the window where I could have picked up on those skills.
Yeah, and I know it's not too late, because that's always what you hear from older people. It's like it's never too late. But there is a certain plasticity of the brain that goes away. And that includes for like language acquisition. And this movie, like, to tie it back, I mean, his whole experience of like, you know, I'm American and no, I don't speak this language. And there's this, he feels very dumb. He feels, and while you can, sure, hey, people in Europe, make fun of us all you want about how we don't speak a second language. We've earned that. Like, we should always speak in Spanish, but we don't.
Yeah, I fucking, like, the way this country, this government, like,
it doesn't want
actually
that.
Preparing people for real life skills. It's,
no.
That's, sorry, capitalism, it doesn't serve for capitalism in America. They don't want us to be, they don't want us to find other countries accessible.
Exactly.
For our
don't
life
leave.
And well-being.
Don't ever leave.
No.
Just go vacation there with your money. I mean, the other thing, though, is there is that aspect of it, but... you know, there's also
I'm so cynical.
No,
holy
it's fine.
Fuck.
I was also just thinking about how our country is so big. Like, you know, if you could take 1 hour train ride and you're suddenly in a place where they speak a different language, you're probably going to interact with people more often, and people who want to practice their German or practice their Italian, or I'm French, he's German, but we both speak, you know, Polish, so that's how we communicate. You know, like there's all this opportunity to exchange that we don't get, you know, or that, you know, someone like me living in like Ohio, I mean, there are some, it's not as if you're never exposed to another language. We had plenty of people who spoke Spanish and we had a lot of different immigrant communities, but in no way is that a thing that's like, you know, shared or encouraged. If anything, it's like, you guys need to take ESL and learn our language. And it's we don't have an official language. America has no official language. People think that English is it, but no, there's none. So like, shut the fuck up. If you want to go cynical,
but I mean, you're not wrong.
It's like... annoying. And so I feel somewhat disturbed by like our educational system, but also just by the accident of geography, you know. And Linklater, to get back to him, I mean, it's so interesting to see like this Texan in Europe, you know. It's almost like the reverse of the Paris, Texas thing, where it was this German guy in America.
I see what you did there.
You like that? Yeah. I thought it was fun. But anyway, a few more things about Linklater. He, for a time, attended Sam Houston State University, but he dropped out to work on an offshore oil rig in the Gulf of Mexico. During that time, he earned a fair amount of money because they pay well. He also read a lot of novels. And then when he came back on shore, he was in Houston. He spent a lot of time seeing movies at a repertory theater, and he decided he wanted to be a filmmaker. So mm-hmm. he used some of his savings, well, a lot of his savings, to buy a Super 8 camera, a projector, editing equipment, and then he moved to Austin, Texas, and decided I'm going to start making films. He founds the Austin Film Society in 1985 with several other important film people. I didn't write their names down. I'm sorry. He begins doing a lot of experimental filmmaking. He starts his own production company. Again, he makes Slacker. He goes on to make Dazed and Confused, which gets like commercially successful and critical acclaim. He is like one of those great fucking people who has managed to like, he lives in Austin and he refuses to live or work in Hollywood for any extended period of time. Mm-hmm. Like he doesn't have to. He's like, nope, I figured I'm good. And I kind of love that. Also, another fact, he's been a vegetarian since his 20s.
Good for him.
So, you know, he'll probably outlive us all.
Good for him. Yeah.
Just a few other movies. We will talk more about mm-hmm. Linkletter because we're going to be talking about two other films. So I didn't want to... There'll be more.
Don't want to bust your load.
So this is just up to Before Sunrise. Just up to there. Mm-hmm. Just before
just,
Sunrise.
It's just the tip.
Just before Sunrise. But a few movies that he's done... in no particular order. School of Rock, which I forgot about. So commercial and, you know, whatever. School of Rock, Bernie, Boyhood, which we mentioned, and Where'd You Go, Bernadette? You familiar with that one?
Oh, yeah. No, I haven't watched it, but I know what Cate Blanchett and Kristen Wiig.
It's like vaguely about Anna Wintour, like, or it's sort of based on her, I think. Maybe I'm wrong about that.
I wouldn't know.
Anyway, Linkletter or Linklater.
Vaguely remember the trailer.
I'm going to get to the bottom of this Linkletter. Linklater. Later. I will figure it out
Linklater.
So I mentioned who my best supporting player nom was. What is yours? Is it also the palm reader?
Tie for the couple at the beginning.
The arguing couple. Excellent. Okay.
Really good. I would say more so the wife than the husband, just because the way she slaps that newspaper and then storms to the back. And I did go on Reddit, or I did look it up, and it was posted on Reddit, like a translation of what they're arguing about.
Oh, really?
They're basically just like sick of each other.
Oh, God.
You know? She's just complaining about his bullshit, and he's complaining about hers, and I don't remember the specifics of it. It's very like I'm bored, very typical of you, you're annoying, you're, you know, it's just this sort of like this very like sort of reminds me of like I don't know, like a No Exit, or like no, a little bit of a Waiting for Godot, like I'm leaving.
Yeah, when are you gonna go? Yeah,
who cares? I hate you. I'm going to the dining car. No, wait for me.
Yeah, right, like they're fighting but they stay together to fight, like
exactly.
It's like, oh god, this is some horrible like fighting fish pair.
like they're just
this is their symbiosis,
this is their thing
something.
That they do,
you know. Footnote, I if I'm not mistaken, that actor, the man in that half of that couple, owned one of the cafes that appears later, and that they used, like, basically that place where the palm reader comes and talks to them. I guess that cafe was owned by the dude who was in this scene. So they must have, right, like, been, I don't
very
know.
Very collaborative.
Yeah, I don't know exactly.
I do like that.
I mean, it's funny because I don't know what the order of operations is, because they shot this thing almost chronologically. So I'm like, did they meet him? And then he's like, oh, I could give you a location or something.
Yeah.
You know? Like, I don't know. But there's all kinds of little trivia out there about this movie, some interesting, some not. Sometimes people put like continuity errors in trivia, like his hand is on a salt shaker, but when they cut, he's crossing his arm. Like, who cares?
I don't care.
I used to literally have to look out for continuity, and I can tell you, editors pick the best take that for performance.
We got a better quality film because of that.
Yeah, like, that was a choice.
Let's take the shitty performance
because the salt shaker matches.
Yeah,
you know, like just saying, like it's like the plot holes and cinema
when they're really big and distracting, it's funny. But
well, that's different, you know. Big and distracting is big and distracting, but like, I don't know, I'm
looking for certain minor things. Like, I will say, like, I've watched
it. Continuity matters. Of course it matters.
To a degree. I will say it is distracting in Pleasantville when Reese Witherspoon's hair goes from very tight curls Just before they're about to get sucked into the TV, they have to call Don Knotts to come repair the remote because they...
Don Knotts is kind of evil in that movie.
Yeah,
right?
he's just sinister. They try to make it out like it's whimsical what he's doing. Like, I'm teaching you life lessons. And it's like, no, he's a freak.
That guy was the devil.
No, he actually was like a freak, and he is like a dick to them about like them not cooperating with his like... I'm giving you this great life and you're messing with it. But
that's right.
My point being, Reese Witherspoon's hair, her curls fall out at some point in this scene. Mm-hmm. And it's like a back and forth between her and Don when he first comes into the house to fix the remote. And yeah, her hair goes from being like sort of this loose scruffy, and then she turns around and it's like all like very tightly. Like the makeup lady just went and recurled her hair really fast or something.
Wow.
Or yeah. Or I don't know. They just they did a take of it with the tight hair, and then they had lunch and then they came back.
Yeah, right. Like, all right, let's turn it around.
Now that's a distracting inconsistency.
When I learned to do continuity and script supervising, we took, you know, I took like a little course. It was literally somebody went to a woman's apartment where she taught us, and I paid her money. But it wasn't bad. Whatever. I could work from the skills. But she showed us a scene from Baskets, actually, which, I mean, I love that show, so right. I wasn't mad. But there was like a scene where they go to like the Easter buffet together, and he's got a cigarette that's like bent. Mm. And then it's like not bent, and then it's bent again. And it's like really egregious, but it's like it's the... doesn't matter. It's the performance. Like, no, you might notice, but no, it doesn't matter enough.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. So
it's like, I mean, yeah, you can forgive these things if it's I can let go of Reese Witherspoon's inconsistent hair because Pleasantville is.
Yeah.
I really like that movie. Okay.
Yeah. Also, I mean, like for a movie that this movie is, I mean, to do continuity for this, it's like, it's the most important thing really for the actors, because mm-hmm. it's like, okay, how many hours have I known you now? Like, you know, how intimate should we be? I think that's part of why they shot it in chronological order, because they really didn't want to, you know, it would be too, like, very challenging. So they would sometimes just go back to a location a second time mm-hmm. if it meant keeping things in order. So
I think that makes sense.
It does for this movie. That's so good.
It adds to the authenticity. I mean, it makes it, that's how it becomes so watchable, is the attention paid to trying to make as authentic mm-hmm. of a, like to present as authentic of a connection.
Yeah.
That's what sells this, because otherwise it is a little too fanciful how everything comes together for them, in my opinion, but it's their chemistry and mm-hmm. the naturalness of it.
Yeah.
And, how endeared, like right away. I certainly felt to both of them.
Yeah, and again, his whole notion of time travel. When they're coming to the end of the night, you know, he says something about how like we're returning to real time again.
Yeah,
time. But there is something kind of like, I mean, I can understand why the director had this experience and felt the need to try to create it on film. You know, like there's something about like. To that, just being with somebody and talking all night, and I don't know, it somehow like accelerates something. Like, I think sometimes, you know, when people meet and they really click, it's like they, and you know, you hear like, well, we talked all night. It's like, right, 'cause you're probably in love. Like, you know, I mean, it's like it, for some people, it just, it's, it, you know, like right away because of things like this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Yeah. I'm usually fairly cynical too. Maybe not as much tonight, but but I'm with you. I think I was like prepared to go in and be like, bah, bah. And I'm like, no, I like this. This was good.
No, it was,
this
was really good. It was nice. It's
thoughtful. I love
it. It was refreshing.
Yeah, it was quite fresh. thank you so much for listening. You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter and Letterboxd at Fresh Movie Pod. Where can they follow Chelsea? I never give your handles.
Oh, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Chelsea the Pope, or on TikTok at Chelsea_Pope. Hey, wait, but Victoria, where can people follow you at?
Oh, no, no one should follow me.
No, shut up.
No, you can find me at Criterion.
You're going to have to embrace it someday.
Oh, okay, go ahead. Criterion OOC is Twitter. What am I on Instagram? Vic Rohar, VIC. Oh, I'm doing this terribly.
I like Vic Rohar.
Vic Rohar, VICROHAR. Yeah.
It's the first the initial few letters of each. Both her first and last.
First and middle.
And middle and last yeah. name.
All right. We always ask you for reviews, but, you know, not we don't have to this week. That's okay.
Yeah. We don't need it.
Take a break.